Lawyers for webcasters have filed an appeal of the rate's increase in federal court, and the Internet Radio Equality Act has over 120 sponsors in the House. But what will happen to web streams after July 15th remains to be seen. This has been a Pacifica special program, The Day the Music Died, Web Radio in Peril. Nathan Morse, the National Program Coordinator at Pacifica. Special thanks to Leanne Caldwell, who got the Senators on tape. And music by Asteroid Power Up. For more information or to comment on this program, you can visit KPFA's homepage, kpfa.org. Michael Manicheri, who's the web guy, has put a link over on the left for the web radio issues. This special program was produced at KPFA by myself, Eric Klein. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Day the Music Died, Web Radio in Peril. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at KPFA for satellite operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's Ursula, ursula@pacifica.org. I'm this week's producer, Eric Klein, from KPFA in Berkeley, California. See you next week on Sprouts.
And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, if you're on the net. I'm Robert Norris, and coming up next, it's the Thursday edition, July 12, 2007, of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Stay tuned.
They keep pouring up from one ledge and now to sing his lovely ballad. Here is Mama Cass.
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty-night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me.
Da 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 da
And that, of course, was Mama Cass from one of her early, early albums. And it looks like we have an early, early call. Let's see who's in line here. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, my name is Sebastian Spiris. I'm actually calling to give a heads up. Saturday night at 8, a couple fellas from the East Coast, Jason Beck and Chris Bruin, are going to have a concert at Cayuga Vault, I believe it's called.
At where?
Cayuga Vault.
Cayuga Vault, okay.
And I was just wondering if there's any way to give, like, sort of an announcement on your radio show.
I can't hear you. Speak up, could you?
Yeah, I was just wondering if there's any way to give an announcement on your radio
show. You just did. Congratulations.
Oh, really? That was so simple, man.
Yeah, now, actually, if it's a commercial announcement, I'll probably be banned from the show, but maybe it has some redeeming social value, eh?
Well, it does. Jason's a young jazz pianist. He'd be really great for a lot of people to see.
Will you be letting low-income people in free?
I think it's worth a shot. I'm among those considered that. So.
Huh. And where is this happening again? At what time?
Cayuga Vault, 8 o'clock on Saturday.
And do you know where the Cayuga Vault is?
It's on SoCal.
Okay. And this is at what time?
8 o'clock.
And again, the name of the group?
It's two different musicians. One is Jason Beck, and the other is Chris Bruin.
Chris Bruin and Jason Peck?
Great. Jason Beck, B-E-C-K, like the beer.
I gotcha. All right, well, you got the word out at least once on the air.
Thank you so much, man.
All righty.
Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And if you have something you want to announce, particularly if it has to do with, I don't know, free or low-income services, something that actually is accessible to most of the community without paying through the nose, and is relatively non-commercial, hey, I'm interested. And even if it's commercial, if it has some redeeming social value, you might try and give me a call here at 427-3772. More important, however, if you have updates about what's going on in the community, hassles by police, or positive behavior by the police, we're all waiting for that epiphany where the police decide to stop enforcing of discriminatory laws against the poor or laws selectively enforced by merchants, such as I learn they're continuing to cook up. The police are orchestrating sessions with the downtown merchants and residents. I talked to someone who attended such a session yesterday, a local merchant who was candid about their being concerns about those homeless people on the streets and those panhandlers on the streets, and as well as legitimate problems like people who are drunk and people who are abusive, which is, you know, a legitimate concern. The main problem I always have with this kind of police-orchestrated deal is not only did it lead to bad laws like the sleeping ban, the downtown ordinances in the first place, but it leads to the elimination of or the harassment of a class of people because the police mentality is often a lot less tolerant than the general sense of the community, or I would say the appropriate constitutional rights that people in the community should have, regardless of what the sense of some powerful people in the community might think or might want. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, or Freak Radio, if you will, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and for the next 2 hours, I will be babbling at you, and hopefully you will be babbling back. Planning to do a lot of replaying, I should say playing for the first time, of taped interviews I did recently on the streets, out looking for plaintiffs for the sleeping ban lawsuit. That's the lawsuit that attorneys Kate Wells and David Beauvais and members of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Human Rights Organization, Santa Cruz, Housing Now in Santa Cruz, and Humanity for Homeless are getting together to cook up, following the lead of the Los Angeles ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild, which down there were able to secure a ruling from the federal courts at the appeal level, the Ninth Circuit level, which covers 9 states, that sleeping outside is not a crime. In fact, it's a crime to criminalize it. It's a crime to go after people whose only crime, quote-unquote, is falling asleep at night. And that's currently the law as dictated by the Ninth Circuit all through the Skid Row area in Los Angeles and throughout the town in San Diego and throughout the town in Richmond because the law was changed because the Richmond City Council saw the writing on the wall, unlike the Santa Cruz City Council, which continues to remain blind, deaf, and dumb on the issue, in spite of the fact that they know darn well that the law in the largest city in the state is that it violates the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, banning cruel and unusual punishments to punish people with police harassment and ticketing for sleeping at night. That's done to 1,500 to 2,000 people every night in Santa Cruz. That is to say, they face that threat. The police aren't going after each one of them. And full disclosure, the police and Parks and Rec Rangers, under the vigorous and vigilant John Wallace, ticket or have been ticketing about 60 a month, 60 people a month, which is, you might say, well, that's what, one person a night, well, two people a night out of a population of 1,500 to 2,000. This is true. However, it's still a violation of the Constitution. It puts the rest of the people in a state of anxiety. It makes people afraid to sleep together in groups. It makes vulnerable people like elders and women afraid to use well-lighted areas or to use police services because they are technically illegal if they fall asleep or cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. I'm actually going to be talking about this subject on a bigger radio station, KPFA Pacifica, in a week. A program, I believe, starts at noon. I got a call from Chris Welch today of KPFA lining me up to do that. And for those of you who are KPFA listeners, tune in, and I guess you can probably call in, because as regular listeners of this station, Free Radio Santa Cruz, know, Mayor Bates of Berkeley, perhaps no direct relation to Norman Bates of Psycho, but in acting in a fashion that, shall we say, is not the kindliest toward homeless people, has proposed a thing called the Public Commons for All, which is actually known to the more sensitive in the community as the Public Commons for All but the Homeless Initiative, which Osha Newman, an attorney, an artist, a local community activist, writer, has discussed on this show. And he's actually, I think he may be on the air as well up in Berkeley talking about the latest scheme by Bates to make it illegal for homeless people, it may be to sit down on the sidewalk, as here in Santa Cruz it is. It's illegal to sit on the sidewalk unless you are 14 feet from a building, which means that 95% of all sidewalks in the city near businesses are ruled out. And, of course, it gives the police selective enforcement powers, which they quite willingly use, and particularly at the behest of any merchant or elderly conservative resident who might have a problem. I'm not trying to be ageist in my talk. It's just, of course, the wonderful planning sense of the city has thrown elderly residents and vulnerable residents into downtown neighborhoods that put them in conflict with the rest of the community, and particularly clubs like the E3, which, as you know, has been, or maybe you may know, it's a club at on Cathcart Street between Pacific and Front Streets, which has been denied a license because they allow dancing and they sell alcoholic beverages after 11 o'clock at night, and two residents, according to the owner, Wes Anthony, have complained about it. And I'm going to be playing more of that discussion, the hearings before the Planning Commission on Sunday morning. I'm going to ask Thomas Levitt if he's available and if he wants to play some of that on his show, which begins at 7:30 in the morning for all you early birds. 7:30 Sunday morning, coming up in 3 days. You can hear more of Wes Anthony, or perhaps more of Thomas Levitt, who has got his own thoughts on lots of issues, and I encourage you to listen in to him. My show on Sunday starts at 9:30 and runs to 1, and I may be playing some of it there, too. Also going to be having on soon, for those of you who want a kind of a preview into the future, an update on the issue of psychiatric drugs. You may recall I've had people on the air like Robert Whitaker, author of Mad in America, whose research on psychiatric drugs as a Boston Globe journalist or a former Boston Globe journalist led him to some shocking conclusions that, in essence, psychiatric drugs do worse for most people than no drugs at all, although no doubt there are exceptions, and that this fact is constantly ignored or denied by the pharmaceutical industry, naturally, by the psychiatric establishment. A little more surprisingly, since you would think they might be concerned about the well-being of the people that they supposedly are getting paid to help or have sworn an oath to help. Or are we going to call it the hypocritical oath, perhaps, instead of the hypocritic oath? He is going to be, he won't be on the air. He may be coming back on the air. I got an email from him today, or he may be simply be reading from him some of his most recent research and that of his chief antagonist, or I should say protagonist. How's that? The person who's a supporter of the use of psychiatric drugs and who strongly disagrees with him on a number of issues, a psychiatrist named F. Fuller Torrey, who I have asked to come on the air, but he hasn't responded other than simply sending me an email or two talking about his disagreement with Whitaker on a number of issues, and that's okay, although I'd love to see the two of them actually debating each other, discussing the issue, clarifying their points of agreement and disagreement and so forth, because I think that this is really a vital issue, particularly since so many more people are now diagnosed with this and that, particularly young children, and they're being drugged out of their skulls, and it's a pretty serious situation. We're also going to try to follow up on the Robert Whitaker interview we had about 2 months ago, and you can find that on archived, as you can find all the shows archived. Well, you might not be able to find them, but they're there. You just don't, they're not, some of them are not so well described yet because I lag in my indexing. In fact, I'd love to have some help with that, all you faithful listeners out there. If you want to do something as well as listen, I can use some volunteers to go through the old shows and help me index them and put that indexing online so people can actually not just go back to a show, but actually see what show they're going back to in terms of what's actually in the show as well as just the date. But you can go back to older shows all the way back to mid-2004, and the way to do that is to go to the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it's at www.huffsantacruz, all small letters, all one word, huffsantacruz.org. And you just click on the website, go to the name of this show, which is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, a cross between bathrobe and Robespierre, between that which you wear if you're outside trying to get a good night's sleep and you can't because the police are arresting you, a bathrobe, and Robespierre, the French revolutionary leader who was an advocate in his time for the poorer people, actually more for bourgeois people, but least against the wealthier or more aristocratic classes, hence the jokeful name Bathrobespierre. And the name of the show is Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. That's the name of the show you're listening to. You just click on Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. You can go back to check out old shows. And what we're going to be trying to do is go to have a panel to come in of local victims or consumers or, I don't know, end-consumed products of the so-called mental health system locally, Dominican psych ward, long-time tardive dyskinesia victims of various psychiatric medications, people who've been through the board and care scene and come out the other end. And they'll give you some idea of what's happening here in Santa Cruz. And along those lines, although it's not perhaps directly relevant, since I'm not quite sure what percentage of the people in the Pleasant Care nursing home have any psychiatric disabilities. Kim Rumford, a local activist who's fed homeless people for a year and a Monday night feeding taken over by Valerie Promise and Swami, who have better street names, but for some reason they don't come to my mind. I always call Swami the Bami Swami, but he and Valerie have been putting out the music and putting out the food and occasionally putting out the spiritual counseling and trying to raise community, that is to say, make people aware of their links with each other, to support each other in a positive way. Humanity for the Homeless, the group that Tim Rumford worked for originally, was doing this Monday meal, and Tim got very ill, and he still is, but he's still working on investigative journalism and working on the Pleasant Care scandal. A lot of this you can find on indiebay.org, which is a local kind of website, indie media site where you can actually post your own stories and your own comments about stories that have been posted. And in fact, tonight I'm going to be going to one of those stories because, strangely enough, the Good Times Weekly published one of my letters, which I actually didn't really directly send to them. I sent it to them and a bunch of other people because that's what I often do when I want to raise an issue, but I never expected them to actually print it. I was quite surprised when I turned the pages of the Good Times this morning, and there it was in black and white right there in front of my eyes. And the original discussion is available on indiebay.org. And also there's a number of other issues. If you're interested in homeless civil rights issues, which is one of the main topics of this show, again, if you have a computer, go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And there are other, that's Santa Cruz Indie Media. And, you know, there are problems with Santa Cruz Indie Media, and we've talked about those in the past, and we'll talk about them again. But they also provide some options. If you don't stray too far outside leftist, what do you call it, orthodoxy. And even if you do, if you don't stray, you got to give it a try. Actually, Tim Rumford for a while did a site called Censorship, Santa Cruz Censorship, and he tried to post stories that were turned down by indie media or censored, and we're still trying to get that back up again. But he's, as I said, been ill, hasn't been able to feed, but Swami and Val have taken over that feeding on Monday. And for those of you who are hungry out there and happen to have access to a radio for some strange reason, but not to food, and I guess that can happen, every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights, there's usually a little something to eat, sometimes more, sometimes less. And there's some dancing and some good music in front of New Leaf Market on the streets, on the sidewalk, where people are taking back the public space that the merchants, the police department, and the city council, through the city staff and the city manager, Dick Wilson, have taken away from the community. They're trying to return that to us. And they are, by, you know, essentially ignoring bogus and selectively enforced downtown ordinances that were specifically engineered for the purpose of getting rid of homeless people, and also any street performer that a particular merchant doesn't like around. I've talked about in the past how to deal with that problem, and we'll be talking about it again. A number of street performers are going to court, including Mr. TV, who was on last show on Sunday, talking about his case. I believe he was arraigned, and he asked for a jury trial, and it was turned down because they said, no, you can't have a jury trial. It's just what's called an infraction crime. And he then said, well, Your Honor, that's a violation of the Constitution. The Seventh Amendment of the Constitution guarantees the right to a jury trial in all cases involving more than $20. And I think he's right, actually. That's not something I've pressed locally because they don't want you to have a jury trial, and they try to ignore you. And if you try to make too much noise, they send in the deputies, which doesn't necessarily mean you should stop making noise. I find that deputies have come to quiet me down on a number of occasions and have found that it's not the wisest thing for them to try to do, because sometimes, in fact many times, it's appropriate to raise your voice, and the First Amendment protects a raised voice when abuses are in fact happening. So, the point I'm making here actually is 17 at the same time, but what I'm going to get to in a moment is the fact that this Good Times Weekly, which usually doesn't have a lot in it that interests me, though has been a little more news-heavy in the last year than in the past, has published a letter of mine which has to do with our local Santa Cruz assemblyman. And again, we're not talking about our federal congressman, Representative Farr, who I have regularly denounced for failing to regularly vote against military appropriations and instead taking an equivocal position on that and the war in Iraq, although he's gotten better. And indeed, I believe in the last day or two, he signed on to the impeachment resolution against Cheney and perhaps against Bush. I know against Cheney. So that's good news. Whether he's going to vote against the military bill that is currently coming through Congress, I doubt, but I haven't gotten word from him. But this is not about Farr, as I said. This is about the Assemblyman John Laird. An Assemblyman, as some of you probably already know, is a person who represents in our district the Santa Cruz area, and it's probably a chunk of territory that includes some other counties, parts of other counties too, in the usual gerrymandered way, the strange, distorted way these districts are drawn, in the state legislature. They make laws for the state. You know, the laws make it illegal to, most of the codes you might break or seek protection under, if in that rare instance where a law actually might protect you, is a state code, because we have a federal system in this country where federal laws, they exist, but usually it's the state laws that are more significant. It's the state laws that the state courts enforce. I mean, the feds will go after you for different things like growing marijuana or, refusing to talk before a federal grand jury. I'm thinking of cases I've recently seen. Or I guess there are some federal statutes that are, you know, if you're a terrorist, of course, you don't get the benefit of law. If they want to call you a terrorist, they just lock you away in Guantanamo, which is another matter entirely, and which kind of makes a joke of the whole legal system. Rather very serious, sad joke, and a grim joke, but a joke nonetheless. Anyway, the state legislature has as its local representative, and we have supposedly, our man there is a guy called John Laird. I used to call him Lord Laird back in the 80s when he was the mayor in Santa Cruz, because he was a big supporter of the anti-homeless laws, the sleeping ban at that time. And he went to extreme lengths. He would arrest people at city council. He would refuse to put items on the agenda. He was a genteel kind of, I don't want to say fascist, because that's such an overused word, but he was extremely repressive toward homeless people. And ironically, he's very enlightened. I think he's a gay guy, I believe, or certainly a supporter of gay rights. But, you know, a guy who lives on the West Side, he's made his pile. He's doing what he's doing. He's well-regarded by a lot of people, and in many respects, he's liberal. But in terms of local issues, for example, around the police department or around homeless people, he's not. And to me, that's really a key issue, because if you're not progressive locally and you don't want to restore rights that have been looted of the poorest people in town, then you are part of the problem. And you need to be exposed, you need to be opposed, and you need to be encouraged to take a different line or have somebody else replace you if you are in a position of public power. Anyway, Assemblyman John Laird voted on a resolution last month. AB 221. I'm going to read you what I wrote about that. John Laird voted for AB 221 last month in the State Assembly, a bill disinvesting massive amounts of money in state pension funds from Iran. Unless and until the State Department certifies Iran non-terrorist, quote-unquote, and after Iran stops nuclear weapons development. Democrats like Laird are beating the war drums or going along with the war drum chant. Does this sound familiar? Anti-war activists, I write, might consider a protest at Assemblyman Laird's office as their next target. There were protests, you may remember, at the Capitola Recruiting Center by the Raging Grannies. And that's great. I did some protesting myself there when the war broke out in 2003 and would have done some a couple weeks ago had I known about this Code Pink, Raging Grannies activity organized by activists like Ruth Hunter and Sherry Connable and others. Good for them. But closer to home and right downtown on the county building, we got Assemblyman John Laird's office. I think it's on the second or third floor, might be the fourth or fifth. It's in the directory of the county building at 701 Ocean Street. He voted, and admittedly, along with the unanimous assembly, for this bill, AB 1221. This is a bill that divests, that say, removes California public employees' retirement system money and California state teachers' retirement system money from Iranian investment, with certain exceptions, until such time as either Iran has been removed from the United States Department of State's list of countries which have been determined to have repeatedly provided support for acts of international terrorism, and B, the president determines and certifies to the appropriate congressional committees that Iran has ceased its efforts to design, develop, manufacture, or acquire a nuclear explosive device or related materials and technology. In other words, this leaves in the hands of President Bush and in the hands of the United States State Department whether this huge amount of money, whether the state of California can invest in Iran around these issues, with these funds. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a big supporter of the Iranian government. They are repressive toward people in their country. The leader of the country is anti-Semitic to the max, although his anti-Semitism has been described, when it's described as a militaristic attempt to militarily attack the state of Israel and wipe it off the map physically. I think that's a falsification. But he's no buddy of mine. And what I don't like, however, is the fact that he's the next target of the Bush regime. And I think this is generally understood by a lot of people that the rhetoric is being hyped up against Iran. And the idea that Assemblyman Laird is going along with this bullshit, to me, means Laird has got to be given a wake-up call by a lot of people. Of course, now I should get you the Assemblyman's phone number, and perhaps I can do that later in the show, because I'll just have to go online and figure it out. For those who, by the way, want to call in with comments or thoughts, phone number here is 427-3772. 427-FRSC, 427-3772. I'm going to actually try to get Laird's number. I don't know if he has an answering machine. I left a message with his workers last week in order to kind of, you know, see what his position is. Maybe he can explain it better. Maybe he has some secret strategy where, you know, he's not really supporting the Bush position here, but it's something different. And, you know, I could get some clue as to what he's doing. Nobody from his office has, strangely enough, returned my call. Now, I'm looking online for his 27th Assembly District phone number, and indeed it's here. His local phone number, for those of you who want to call it, is 4... And of course, it's hard to read here because it happens to be... Hang on just a second. It's 425-1503. 425-1503. In fact, what I'm going to do right now is give a call to John Laird's office and see if possibly we can leave him a message or find out what he's up to. Oops. We got to try that again. I think I screwed up on that. We'll do it one more time. We'll try to dial that one more time. Again, if you want to reach John Laird's office to ask what he's doing with AB 221, the bill that essentially disinvests millions of dollars and essentially gives a powerful tool to the White House and to those who want to ratchet up the war drums against Iraq, or Iran, in this case, a country right next door to Iraq. There we go. Now, let's see here. Oh, I keep getting a problem on this line. I will try one more time. I think I can do it. Let's see here. I know I can. I know I can. I know I can. Again, the phone number for Laird's office is 425-1503. But it doesn't seem... I think we have a problem here. Yeah, I think that's a problem with our board on that particular number. So I'm going to try another line. Anyway, a little bit more from this before I call in and publicly request again for the third time that he come clean on this issue and say just what the heck is happening, because I'd like to know. Let's see. Some more of this, what I wrote, which is reprinted in the Good Times. This seems to me to be part of a war drive on Iran using the familiar weapons of mass destruction excuse that was used in Iraq, namely saying, well, as soon as you stop developing a nuclear weapon, of which the United States has, 10,000, then we're going to ratchet down the screws, even though Pakistan has a nuclear weapon and Russia right next door has a nuclear weapon, Israel, one country over, has a nuclear weapon, U.S. troops are in Iraq, 170,000 strong, and they're U.S. Carriers in the Persian Gulf that are nuclear-equipped. You have to eliminate all nuclear weapons research. This sounds preposterous to me. And it's clearly focused. I mean, there are plenty of countries that are really dangerous, that have plenty of nuclear weapons, like Pakistan, and very repressive. And there are countries, you know, former Soviet republics that are authoritarian. There are countries throughout the Middle East that are authoritarian, that need to be brought into line. There are, you know, countries that are running around nuclear like Israel that need to be controlled as well. And not to mention the United States and Russia, you know. These are the real threats to world peace, potentially, and threats to provoke an actual Holocaust, which, though we don't talk about it much and we don't think about it much, is right there, 20 minutes away or less. So, reading more from this letter, ominous parallel developments range from a U.S. buildup in the Persian Gulf, which I just mentioned, to heightened propaganda activity focusing on Iran rather than, say, Saudi Arabia or Syria or the U.S. as a source of insurgent weaponry in Iraq. You know, the Iranians are supplying all these weapons. No doubt they're supplying some weapons, but so are a lot of the other countries, and so is the U.S. and so forth. I mean, there's a huge amount of weapons being supplied, and I guess who's the major military power in Iraq? Well, it's not Iran. I think you know who they are, and in fact, you're funding them. So, it's the United States. I left both email and phone messages with Laird's office, as I said, over a week ago, asking for clarification. And then a few days ago, Allie, a staff worker there, confirmed that Laird had voted for this bill, AB 221. She promised to inform Laird of my interest, both personally as a member of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and as a Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster. And again, you can call him yourself at 425-1503, and you can get the full text of this bill, AB, and it looks like, it's 221, and you can just go online and find it. There's a long email address, but if you're interested in my story, it is online, and you can also find it at in the Good Times letters section of today's Good Times. So that's my thought on this, and there, actually it's kind of kicked up some spirited debate. A number of people have disagreed with me. They think disinvesting from Iran is a fine idea, and they haven't clarified why they think, you know, that it's not clear to me why this isn't, you know, a vote of support for Bush's foreign policy, because that's what he's trying to do, and it's linked to State Department and presidential criteria. So I don't understand why anybody would want to do this. Unless they're either a supporter of Bush's policy, or they think it won't make any difference, that it's okay to do it, given the kind of warmongering lunacy we have in the White House. I mean, I don't think that's really too strong a statement at this point. So I invite anybody to call in if they got some thoughts, 427-3772. And again, one more time, I really am going to try to give a call to that assemblyman's office, and I bet this time I'm going to get through. I bet. Let's see if I can do that. Let's see here. Assemblyman John Laird, and we'll give it a try. 425-1503, and we'll see where we're at. See where we go. I seem to be all thumbs today, but I think I can do it. Let's see if we got it here.
Hi, you've reached the office of Assemblymember John Laird. To leave a message for the assembly member or the office in general, please press 10. For Ali Stickler, press 11. For Bill Maxfield, press 12. For
transfer to the receptionist.
So I transferred myself to John Laird's office message phone. We'll see if we can actually get a message through. It's a ringing.
Hi, you've reached the office of Assemblymember John Laird. Please leave a message and someone will get back to you. If you'd like to send a fax, the number is 831-426-2570. Thank you.
Hi, this is Robert Norris calling back for the third time. I'm actually making this call live on the air on Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday evening. And again, I'm looking for a description and discussion of why Assemblyman Laird voted for AB 221 when that bill helps to ratchet up the war effort that President Bush seems to be stage managing against Iran. I'd like to have an explanation so that I can pass it on to the community. And I asked the same question in a Good Times letter, which apparently was published in today's Good Times. And there's an opportunity to give me a call back if you'd like and respond to that. I hope you will. Allie, one of your workers, said she would. I think that's her name. My number is 423-4833. It's been more than a week since I got back, got to you on this issue, and I still haven't heard from you. So, you know, Assemblyman Laird, give me a call. Thanks. So we'll see if John Laird actually does that. I didn't find him terribly responsive when in office, and I, as mayor, that was more than, it was about 20 years ago, and I don't know how responsive he is here as assemblyman, but he's taken his time. Representative Farr's office, even if they disagree with me, tend to get back to me within a week, although not always. That's the Congressman Farr. So we'll see if Assemblyman Laird continues his silence on the issue of voting for a essentially hostile policy towards Iran, which backs up a war strategy. It seems to me, anyway, to back up a war strategy against Iran, which I think the majority of the constituents in his district oppose, even though the Assembly voted unanimously for it, strangely enough, and he jumped on board that bandwagon. So if you have some concerns, you might want to give him a call at 425-1503. There were some dissenting opinions on that. I'm going to read an opinion or two. Actually, I asked one of the writers to call in. I'm not sure if she's listening or not and wants to do that, but I'm going to read some of the comments that were made. Here's a... You can actually read these comments yourself if you go to indybay.org/Santa Cruz, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, one word, Santa Cruz. And it's, let's see. He says, the UN is in agreement with the U.S. on this one and has made it clear that Iran has flubbed every effort to get into compliance with the International Atomic Energy Agency. Different from Saddam, who dragged his feet but generally complied with the UN. Ahmadinejad, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, I can never quite get it right, is conducting, he's the leader of, titular leader of Iran, is conducting a religious crackdown on the women in his country, unlike Saddam, who allowed women to advance in professions and go unveiled. Ahmadinejad has threatened the destruction of a sovereign country, and is talking about this. Israel shall be erased from the map of history, which I think has to do with the nature of the government there and not the people, but obviously there's disagreement on that one. And Ahmadinejad has hosted an international Holocaust denial conference. Remember the good old days when leftist liberals, anarchists, street fighters used to get angry about stuff like that? Does that not bother you, Mr. Norse? Holocaust denial seems to me to be kind of a big joke. It's also, frankly, a First Amendment issue. People want to talk, you know, that there was no Holocaust, or they want to talk, you know, the earth is flat. As far as I'm concerned, let them talk that way, and I will give a large horse laugh. If they start burning crosses on people's lawns or, you know, graffitiing synagogues, that's another issue. Another response critical of me was, explain to me why it is that Iran would change its messed up attitudes, which you so accurately describe in your post, if it got nukes. Why would they all of a sudden recognize Israel's right to exist if they had nukes? That flies entirely in the face of everything known about world politics and history. Countries that have nukes have less reason to negotiate, not more. Also, like the worst of Christian fundamentalists, Mr. Ahmadinejad believes in an end-time scenario involving the return of the 12th Mahdi as every spiritual reason to bring it on. Unfortunately, the left in America is stuck on the Iran of the 90s, where Khatami, previous ruler of Iran, made efforts to come to peace with the West. Ahmadinejad represents a much more extreme position in the world. Is right to be worried about him. Remember, if the U.S. bombs Iran, it won't be because of Israel, but because of Saudi and Gulf kingdoms who are scared of Iran and have paid off our corrupt Republican and Democratic politicians, so forth and so on. And another person writes in, Laird is proposing a nonviolent economic sanction which may have the effect of curtailing Iranian ambitions to develop nuclear weapons. Divestment worked with South Africa without a single U.S. troop committed. Norse sticks his head in the sand, quibbles over English translations of a single quote while ignoring a dozen similar quotes. That's the one about wiping Israel from the map. By Ahmadinejad that clearly threatens the state of Israel. Iranian military parades include Shabab 3 missiles on trucks with banners that say death to Israel and death to America. There were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. However, Iran is busy building them and has threatened to use them. This is a threat to world peace that U.S. government officials would be negligent to ignore. And I then post an article from the Daily Star, a Lebanese paper, which responds, Americans should not be fooled by Bush's reckless depiction of the Iranian threat. Despite all the recent assurances from American officials that the United States does not want to wage war on Iran, the past few weeks have seen a palpable increase in the volume of warmongering rhetoric emanating from Washington. A few months ago, the saber-rattling was all about Iran's alleged attempts to develop nuclear weapons. But now that this overplayed threat no longer stirs the fears and aggressive passions of the American people, the Bush administration is promoting a new allegation that Iran is the mastermind behind lethal attacks on U.S. troops in Iraq. The new charge against Iran is as flimsy, if not more so, as the ones that were circulated prior to the invasion of Iraq. We all recall that Vice President Dick Cheney twisted the facts about one lone Islamic militant in Iraq to fabricate an elaborate story that Saddam Hussein was in cahoots with al-Qaeda prior to the war, and we all recall that this ruse was debunked and quietly forgotten not long after the U.S.-led invasion. Now the U.S. administration is using the same sort of evidence to drum up animosity towards Iran. Yes, the U.S. is detaining 20 Iranians and one Lebanese who it says are part of an organized Iranian effort to undermine the U.S. military's mission. But the Americans are also holding hundreds of Jordanian, Saudi, and Egyptian suspects, yet they have never claimed that this constitutes proof that those states are waging war on U.S. troops. What is most worrisome about this new allegation is that it seems aimed at laying the groundwork for the Bush administration to attack Iran without congressional approval. Using such justifications, the Bush administration can claim that an attack on Iran is part of the already authorized war in Iraq and a necessary step towards defending U.S. troops in the congressionally approved conflict there. Thus, with the new proof against Iran, President W. Bush, the decider, can commence with an attack as he pleases without the bother of gaining the approval of Congress. One can think of countless reasons why 100 or so Iranian intelligence officials or fighters might be in Iraq, not the least of all because the Al-Qaeda outfit in that neighboring country has threatened to start an all-out war in Iran in 2 months' time. But the question that has become increasingly difficult to answer is, what are 160,000 U.S. troops, or 170,000 U.S. troops, doing there? And furthermore, why are they still there when, according to the latest USA Today Gallup poll, a full 70% of the Americans reject that and support a withdrawal? The answer to these questions are no doubt as dark and immoral as the people who are making new claims against Iran. This time the American people will be wise to recall, I'm talking about the Santa Cruz community, too, the old adage that their tongue-tied president once botched, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me." Got comments you can call in, 427-3772, and I would remind you that Nancy Pelosi removed from the authorization for funding for the war in Iraq, which she supported, with its feeble benchmarks and its feeble limitations on the presidential power that was still vetoed by the president, but it contained the clause people wanted to put into it that funding shall not be used for war in Iran. That was removed. There's no prohibition on the funding against being used in war in Iran. So my understanding, and perhaps I could be corrected if anyone understands differently, is a dangerous game is being played over there, one we've seen before, one we need to fight, and we need to fight it as locally as best we can. And one way to do that is to tell Representative John Laird it's time to explain himself and reverse his vote, take some action to... Well, I don't quite understand how he could possibly do what he did. And the answer, of course, is nobody's listening and nobody's holding him accountable, I would think. And he doesn't really have to worry about it. But if people show up at his office, maybe they do. Or if they call him, 425-1503, maybe he does. Let's turn now to a couple of street interviews, since I've been talking for so long and babbling about so much. Perhaps so little, same subject. I was wandering the streets yesterday and the day before that, and came up with some of this stuff.
But actually, trivial. But the matter.
Sorry about that, folks. I think we're actually about to go into an interview now.
20 to 10 on July 9th, 2007, Monday morning, foggy.
Having a little trouble queuing up this tape. My apologies. I thought I was actually readier than I am, but I'm going to be soon, so don't go away.
Touch on the radio. Abby, I think. Cameras, check on that.
You actually can, you can hear me queuing up the tape even as we speak.
I don't give a what any characters, and you need to listen to that.
He did, man, and you... Morning down.
Here we go.
All right, well, it's July 9th, about 5 after 10 on a kind of a foggy, well, overcast morning downtown Pacific Avenue near the Del Mar, talking to...
Dead Man once again back in Santa Cruz for a visit.
Hey, Dead Man, and you said that you recently gave a small lecture in front of the courthouse.
Well, first off, you remember the other night you interviewed, and if that didn't get on the air, go back through your records, and you need to listen to that other from Dead Man, because it's the point that I'm trying to make to my beautiful, loved town of Santa Cruz, to the bohemian town of Santa Cruz that was always like that from the beginning, always a traveling town, and never will change. I don't give a what anybody does. But along with what I said and everything, I was going past the courthouse this morning, and I decided to voice my opinion since I do still live in America. So I voiced my opinion about how, yeah, you look, you run off all the hippies, and there is no pot smoking in Santa Rosa Park anymore, and you know, you have succeeded in running off the bohemians from downtown. But in doing so, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but the crack that they never really seemed to care about at the end of the mall is still there, and it has moved on to Pacific Garden Road. The downtown area, there's only one club in the middle of town now, and it has a kind of a boom, boom, boom sound coming around it, and there's a lot of very nice-looking African gentlemen hanging out with nice...
Dakota, or...?
I don't know what it's called. That doesn't matter. This is radio.
I think you're looking in the direction of the Dakota.
Actually, it's the Vita. Across the street. It's become a very popular club to people from other cities that come over here, usually African-American, and it's a lot of African-American men and white women, and I have no problem with that. My sisters both married Africans, but everybody wants to buy crack now on Main Street instead of pot. And a Pacific Garden Mall. And of course, along with the ones who want to buy it are those that are selling it. So now you can't find any marijuana, which has become somewhat controversial but legal in California. And you can't find any, but you can find crack. And the heroin is still in, and it always will be, in the flats, and very strong, as always. And the methamphetamine, because they've run off the bohemians that they thought were all tweakers, some of them are, and some of them need help really badly. And we of the streets try to help these tweakers, as we call them, because when they tweak out, they're a problem, and everybody knows that. But in causing everybody to go into hiding, the tweakers who always hide are hiding deeper. So you'll never find them. And they're the big problem. That's the worst drug that ever hit the street. And the crack and the cocaine everywhere. And the heroin everywhere. But find somebody smoking a little medicine, shoot them. Because we don't accept that in Santa Cruz anymore. And 2 minutes after I voiced my opinion in front of the courthouse, the Santa Cruz PD came there from both ways. Imagine that.
What did they do having arrived?
They were looking for the must have been a wild, crazy tweaker. Nobody does stuff like that. Like, no one speaks to God anymore. Because if you do speak to God, or he does speak to you, you're crazy.
Did that stop your speaking when the police arrived?
No, I was already standing over in the corner seeing how long it would take them to go. I said my piece and walked over to the corner to see what would happen.
Because I know Preacher Mike, the one-legged Mike, does often preach at the courthouse in loud tones of voice. And of course, he has a hooly bibble with him, so it's, you know, something that, you know, maybe they don't, they feel they can't really intercede with. And I occasionally give a speech.
They run him away.
I haven't noticed that.
Well, see, it's still okay to be a Christian in America and talk about one of the prophets, the king of the prophets, But if you talk about the other prophets, then you're psycho, obviously. And if you speak, you can talk about God. You can talk about God loudly. And thankfully, nobody can do anything about it. But if you talk about the spiritual nature of our government, or in particular, our local constabulary, if you say anything about cops, or if you use the abbreviation for fornication under carnal knowledge.
Fuck.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Did you know that that word was never known in history up until the Second World War, when soldiers were found making love with other soldiers?
I would dispute that.
Now, wait a minute. Now, listen. They were men and women, but we brought women into the military. And when they got caught, see, a soldier can't be thinking about love even if he's not on the battlefield, because...
This is a conversation for off-tape. I don't want the sensitive ears of our listeners to get this kind of historical mythology.
We've tried to destroy something that is beautiful and have actually made it so that people are afraid of it, so that women want to be with women because it's safe. And men are so screwed up that up in San Francisco, where I am at, men walk around wearing real boobs and women have beards.
It sounds like homophobic babble to me, but I will thank you.
You know, that's what they call it, yes. But it used to be called sin.
Indeed. Thank you, Red Man.
Here we are.
Sunday's paper?
I did see Sunday's paper right outside Hoffman's at about 12:30, still a foggy day on Pacific Avenue, the 9th of July, talking with
Doc.
And Doc, what about Sunday's paper?
I don't know, I didn't see it yet.
And a picture of the Pogonip and the great cleanup that our Clean Them Homeless Away artist John Wallace has been featured. I think it's something about fires and how the dangerous homeless. What about the homeless and fires? Any comment on that, Doc?
We don't have fires, I'm sorry to say. We cook in the park where the grills are, where it's legal, or we eat at the kitchens.
So are you claiming that homeless people don't set fires in the Pogonip by accident or even on purpose with a malicious intent to destroy the very society which is helping them?
Yeah. We don't set fires.
So there are dirty camps up in the Pogonip you've seen.
Yeah, but also if you walk into some civilians' homes, they're just as dirty or even dirtier. I mean, we got people that trash out things in both societies, homeless society and also in regular society. Your neighbors and stuff, walk around and look. You see trash in people's yards, even worse.
Now, I've heard recently from a couple of people that John Wallace, Chief Ranger, has threatened people with arrest if they enter the parks after he's given them a citation. And in fact, I've also heard that he carries a gun. Is that true?
I haven't seen a gun or anything.
Yeah, I haven't either, and I just wondered about that. And the arrest...
I've never known him carry a gun.
Yeah, nor have I. And parks rangers... Rangers are not normally gun carriers. They usually don't even do arrests. They, you know, leave that to the police department. But, that's what I'd... One of the stories I've been told, and of course that's not always true.
They got handcuffs and stuff. They can detain you and stuff. Then they call for the police. But I've never known the Rangers out here have guns. Hey, that's a bunch of crock. And that's from someone that's been out in these woods a long time. Much longer than most.
You're an old homesteader, as John Wallace would call you.
Yeah, I'm a troll. Original troll. Not too many of us are back. And not too many of us are left, but we still believe how we believe. We believe in clean camps and make everything better, try to help society.
Now, are you a troll with a camera? What's happening with the camera, you know, shoot the bad rangers on film program?
Yeah, that's a good one, too. We're getting some pictures. They'll be out pretty soon.
Wallace and your cronies... Take note, you are on camera. Anything else, Doc?
No, that's it for now.
Thank you. All right, so it is about 15 to 12 on July 10th? 11th, thank you. Here at the end of the Huff meeting around noon, we're talking with...
Donna and I.
And Shane.
And you guys live in your vehicle, and you've recently seen not only harassment of yourself, but of other people living in their vehicles?
Yes, and other people that are forced to sleep outside.
What have you noticed?
That there's an increasement in the harassment. There's a lot of gossip in the Parks Department about homeless people, and they have a stereotyped attitude and enjoy rousting people in the middle of the night, as well as the police and the sheriffs, who can get very desperate about trying to get someone to move.
And what have you noticed most recently in the last week?
That more people are leaving town, going to Oregon, and people are getting fed up because it's like they're targeted.
At last, we're getting rid of these goddamn bums, man!
Don't say that, Donna. I'm not supposed to say that.
Why?
Just admit that. Just admit to yourself.
Well, they're closing all the soup kitchens, right?
That's well, we've got to find some way to starve them out.
Yeah. And
now, what about you? You guys are living in your vehicle. Have you been subject to harassment?
I can't even count
the
times.
Now you're snitching on us.
I can't even count the times, but it's definitely increasing.
And so what's an example of the last instance of harassment you suffered?
Well, this morning, a county first alarm guy said we had to move our vehicle from the main parking lot at Emmeline because it looked like we might have slept there last night, which
we
didn't.
Well, tell them the whole dialogue. I mean, tell them the whole dialogue. I mean, it was basically, I know this guy for many, I've known this guy for the past 5 years. He's a real nice guy. And he told me himself, he goes, okay, if you want to sleep here at night, park behind the warehouse. He goes, but if you ever tell anybody I said this, I'll deny it. Okay. And then, so that's exactly what we did. He goes, but be on the job by 7 o'clock, it's going to be fine. I was out and moved down to the lower part of the parking lot to do my appointment at 6:30.
Appointment for?
Well, I go to the clinic every morning. And
you have a medical condition that requires this, correct?
Right. So basically, I did better at it at 6:30, half an hour early, you know. And next thing I know, I see this guy walking up, and he knocks on the door, and it was him again. I'm like, oh, great, you know, what can this be? I did everything he asked me to do, you know. And then he goes, yeah, but see, if you're here, you know, and when I get here, I get in trouble, and it looks like you're sleeping here. And I says, well, I didn't sleep here. I'm not sleeping down here. And he goes, well, it doesn't matter. He goes, it just looks like you're sleeping here, so you have to leave. It just looked that way. And that really pissed me off because, you know, I had business there. I wanted to get my blood drawn. And I'm already apprehensive about doing things like that as it is. And I have phobias and stuff, and I just, like, flake out on things like that. And there's any resistance and stuff like that. So when people do stuff like power trip me and stuff like that, it's bad for me. It's bad.
You're a person with AIDS,
right? Full blown, yeah.
And you are you've been suffering. Well, you're hanging in there. You're living in a vehicle. You also got a citation for a laptop on the sidewalk. Originally, it was rabbit food on the sidewalk because you have a bunny Fluffy.
The cop couldn't make up his mind on what his actual reasoning for harassing me was. And his first lie was, oh, I have a little tiny rabbit, a little Dutch lop. I
mean, Fluffy?
Fluffy, yeah, which a lot of people know and love.
The name of the rabbit is Fluffy.
Right. And he tried to tell me that rabbit has been scaring the girls inside the cookie company.
It's killer rabbit, right?
Right.
Wiggling his nostrils, perhaps some sort of sexual harassment.
Right. Yeah, his nuts are too big, okay? So then when he realized how absurd that was, he decided to pick on my laptop. I had set my laptop down for a moment because, you know, my shoulder was tired. And it wasn't out of the bag. There was no clothes or nothing in my bag that would indicate I was homeless or nothing like that. It was just a brand new laptop in a bag. And he said that was litter, and he gave me a ticket for littering.
And did you have a sign where you see it on the, because in the past I know you got a false report from Manthree Srinath of Lulu Carpenters because you had a sign that you were going to exchange computer work for donations, and you were legally seated, and I guess Srinath falsely claimed that you were you panhandling with obscenity.
Well, I figured I'd seen all these people down there with signs, hey, I need a beer, give me a buck, and they're doing pretty well. I figured if I went down there with a real laptop with some real skills, and actually try to get some real work, maybe it wouldn't be looked upon so partially. But it didn't make a damn bit of difference. It was just as bad. So, well.
And you're trying to deal with that ticket even now, because right now the fines, where are they at?
I don't know. I'm not sure where to go.
$1,000 for littering, and then $300 if you don't pay it the first time.
$1,000 is the maximum, but we don't know exactly. You haven't actually gotten a bail schedule, have you?
No, that's just what I heard. I'm sorry.
No problem. You also are you interested in other people from who are having problems with vans to contact you and let you know what their situation is so you can act as an organizing group?
You know, I will help anybody get on the internet, put stuff on the internet, any stories or whatever they have, whatever they charge their cell phones to stand communicating.
Keep the car going if possible.
Yeah, I mean, I got a generator. I have universal cell phone charging stuff, and I don't know. A lot of people are having me charge their phones and iPods on West Cliff.
So what number should people contact you at if they want, or email? How should they reach you?
MaxTech73 at yahoo.com.
For me, it's easier to call me 325-5684.
325-5684?
And I could be reached there, too.
All right. Thank you. We've been talking with
Donna Dice.
And Shane. Thanks.
I have one thing about public records, though. I was noticing in your court case here, it's saying people have to have ID, California ID. Well, we found out to get a birth certificate, which I'm trying to get for Shane because he doesn't have a California ID, he has to go to the county he was born to notarize it, to notarize the application to get it, because it has to be a notarized copy for the DMV to accept it now.
Well, he's obviously a potential terrorist.
Arkansas. And you live here now, you'd have to go there to notarize.
Yeah, but who was born in Arkansas? I mean, the South, nobody here is from the South, right?
Oh, I'm from Alabama.
Oh, for heaven's sake. See what I mean?
Hey, I got something.
Okay.
RoboCop, the black cop?
Officer Perry.
Is that his name, Perry? Okay, well, he told me to my face, because I told him, I just flat out said, look, dude, I'm not going to move. You know, and he says, well, I really don't care if you move or not. The point is not to make you move. The point is to make sure you don't sleep at night.
He's trying to make sure you're more awake about your business. And he's trying to, a more alert attitude, I think, is what he's looking for.
He made it sound like, he made it very clear that their whole goal, their whole logic behind it was that somehow you should not be allowed to sleep at night.
Well, Officer Perry, you know, recently returned from Iraq where he helped train the police in similar techniques. So perhaps here he's simply kind of expanding the successful model that has been used over in Iraq, as we know, that we're having a surge there, things are going well.
He's going to bring trash here, basically.
Yeah, he's going to bring home the lessons of victory.
Well, you know, the police have this 10-step thing that profiles what a gang member is, and it says it very clearly. They all talk in codes, they all carry weapons, they all try. Well, if you look at cops, they match it to a T. They all carry weapons, they all talk in codes. They most of the time all travel in groups or pairs and so forth. And
I
so
think
on.
You're obviously a psychiatric problem, or else you're some sort of terrorist. Thank you, sir.
So it's a warming day on Pacific Avenue, but it's still overcast around 12:30 on Wednesday, the 11th, talking with
Chris Feltz.
Chris, you're carrying two bags.
Right.
You have your rough beard on. You recognize me from earlier times, and you reminded me that you were juggling on the streets of Santa Cruz, what, about 3 years ago?
That's correct.
And now you're back to juggle some more?
No, I'm not juggling anymore. I'm just trying to save up some money to get a plane ticket to move on to a better place. I'm actually going to catch a bus in a little while, but I can keep walking because I've got 15 minutes before the bus leaves.
Okay, because I'm trying to get to someplace myself here, block away. Walk you around the block. Good for your health, Brent.
Well, I actually am having a little bit of problems walking.
Oh, you want to stop here? Why don't we stop here?
We could do that. Maybe we should go we're over against this railing here where there's not too many people crowded around.
All right. Now, so you remember in Santa Cruz, you said you were involved in protests. Did you ever get hassled for juggling here?
No, I never did. I remember a handout that you had said something that some work you had done had legalized juggling.
Well, a lot of us did it. I wasn't the only one.
Well, that's good. So that's good. You know, there needs to be people trying to protect other people's rights, because you're juggling, I don't think you're really hurting anybody. So, you know, it shouldn't be illegal, I don't think.
To say the least. Now, in San Francisco, what kind of work were you doing?
Mostly I was just subsiding and working with public assistance there. I'm on SSI now. I have had some problems with unpopularity, is what I would say. Basically, problems with my ears, and seems to be relating to other problems I'm having.
So, where are you going to hang in Santa Cruz, or you're out of here?
Well, I've got to save up enough money to leave. I wish I could to leave sooner, but maybe some kind corporate sponsor will provide
you along.
Will provide me with some credit so that I may move along.
What are you going to do while you're here? Sleep outside?
Unfortunately, I have little choice in the matter.
Why did you come through Santa Cruz? Are you bound for somewhere?
No, I'm set up here with my address and everything. I am bound as soon as I can save up enough money.
How long
have
you been here?
2 months now.
And how are you being treated here?
Not very well by most people, but occasionally I run into the kindness of strangers. I do not rely on that, however.
No Tennessee Williams man, you.
And have you been treated in Santa Cruz recently yourself? Give me a call. 427-3772 is the phone number here at Free Radio. You're listening to freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We go till 8 o'clock, and hopefully you'll be with us for part of that time, maybe even speaking your own mind. Again, the call-in number, 427-3772. It seems like a computer problem again. My goodness, why am I having so many problems here? well, I guess that goes with the territory. So, I'm going to turn now to a couple of articles that I unearthed, which I think, well, they interested me, and I'm hoping they'll interest you. Impeachment has been a subject that is getting, well, we've talked about it a lot in the Santa Cruz community. I think we even got the city council to pass a very weak resolution recommending that the House Judiciary Committee look into it. Not that they do it, of course, but that they look into it. But as you may know, once the Democrats took control of Congress, impeaching either Cheney or Bush was blocked by both the House leader, Nancy Pelosi, and by John Conyers. Who is the head of the House Judiciary Committee, or has been since November, well, actually since the change in the new Congress took its seats in January. And so there's been no action for the last 6 months, and we've had, you can rack all those deaths and up to the Democrats, because they've had the opportunity to take action, and they've declined to do it. Actually, obviously, it's both the Democrats and the Republicans, and in a way, it's us, too. We could be out there banging on the doors of Congress if we wanted to. But I ran across this article, Good News on Impeachment, which kind of made me feel a little better, and maybe it'll make you feel a little better. It's a Counterpunch article that's on the Counterpunch website, counterpunch.org, and it's by a guy called Dave Lindorf, and it's called A T-Shirt Poll on the Road for Impeachment. And he writes from Austin, Texas. I just spent the weekend in this state capitol talking impeachment at a meeting organized by the Texas Green Party, World Can't Wait, Code Pink, and Austin Impeach, www.austinimpeach.org, and was flying back home via Atlanta. As I was boarding my flight, the pilot, an Air Force veteran like many commercial pilots, looked at the bold Impeach Bush and Cheney emblazoned across my chest, smiled, and said, "I like your shirt." Some 20 minutes later, when the flight attendant came through serving drinks and I asked for a bottle of red wine, she handed me a bottle and then waved away my proffered $5. "With that shirt, you don't have to pay," she said to me. The Texas and Georgia passengers sitting around me laughed appreciatively. The mood in America is shifting rapidly, and President Bush has gone from hero to goat. On this trip to the state where George Bush launched his disastrous political career, I purposefully decided to wear my impeachment shirt while traveling as a way of gauging popular sentiment. I'll confess that having experienced some ugliness back in the 60s when wearing long hair and a beard into the wrong bar or neighborhood could be dangerous, I was a little anxious at first. I needn't have worried. Instead of holding me up at the security gate in Newark, TSA inspectors there complimented me on my prominent call to oust their boss. I got more favorable comments from people waiting at the gate for the flight to San Antonio, including from several guys whose well-muscled physiques and buzz-cut hair suggested they were military. Not one person even scowled, much less took issue with the sentiment expressed on the shirt. It got more amazing when I landed in San Antonio, where two men in military fatigues separately flashed discreet thumbs-up signs as they passed me in the terminal. Austin, of course, which bills itself as the live music capital of America, the city that gave us Stevie Ray Vaughan and Janis Joplin, among others, that has a clothing-optional city park known as Hippie Hollow, and that boasts a 100-strong Wicca coven and an annual Keep Austin Weird road race, was no problem at all. In restaurants, coffee shops, and at the airport, I was complimented on the shirt and peppered with questions about where to buy it. The answer is afterdowningstreet.org if you want to get a Impeach Bush and Cheney t-shirt. Afterdowningstreet.org. But even later, when I flew back and had a plane change in Atlanta, the story was the same. Only support and not a word of opposition. It seems clear to me. Americans have had it with the Bush administration. Unfortunately, this shift is not yet clear to the power elite. The Austin impeachment event, despite being well-publicized and despite the attendance of well over 200 people, only attracted one mainstream reporter, a guy with a video cam from Channel 42, the local CBS affiliate, in attendance. There was no mention of the event the next day in the local daily paper. Nor has the nation's major daily, the New York Times, nor any of the major TV news programs even mentioned the fact that there is already a Cheney impeachment bill, H.R. 333, in the House with 14 co-sponsors, of which Representative Farr is one, I would like to add. That's our local representative, Sam Farr. Or that an independent scientific poll last week found that 54% of Americans want Cheney impeached, while 46% want Bush impeached. On the political front, the Democratic leadership in Congress still hasn't budged on impeachment. Representative Nancy Pelosi cosseted in her wood-paneled speaker's suite, a continent away from her angry constituents, still insists that impeachment is a waste of time, while Representative John Conyers, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, refuses to even discuss the Cheney impeachment bill that's been sitting on his desk for months awaiting action. Despite this shameful silence and obstructionism, though, my experience with the T-shirt tells me that the impeachment movement is sweeping the country. Cindy Sheehan, the pioneer peace and impeachment activist, has aborted her brief retirement and is threatening to run against Pelosi in the Speaker's home district in San Francisco if Pelosi doesn't stop the war funding and let impeachment proceed in the House. In the meantime, the circulation of the debased newspapers of the nation and the viewership of the debased network news programs continue to plummet, and as Americans increasingly recognize that they are not doing their job of informing the public. It seems clear to me that a tectonic shift, that's like an earthquake, has finally occurred in the nation's political mood. It wasn't the November election, though. It has been the continued war and occupation of Iraq and the craven inaction of the Democratic leadership in Congress. Now, finally, ordinary people are getting fed up. Iraq vets are acting up and joining Iraq Veterans Against the War. Active duty soldiers like Aaron Watada and Reverend Lennox Yearwood are standing up. What does all this all mean? Bush and Cheney can be driven from office. This criminal bloody war in Iraq can be ended. That's David Lindorf's story on counterpunch.org. Good News on Impeachment, a T-shirt poll on the road for impeachment. And you can read it yourself at counterpunch.org. And now a dose of reality, an update as of about 5 or 6 hours ago. U.S. troops raid Baghdad Shiite district. U.S. troops raided a Shiite area of Baghdad today, capturing two militants believed linked to Iran. Aha. Indeed, Iran. Call Laird and tell him how much you support his criminalizing and demonizing Iran and support of the administration's policy, as he did last week in the AB 221 vote, actually last month, I believe it was, and sparking a battle that Iraqi officials said killed 19 people. Two employees of the Reuters news agency were among the dead. Angry residents of the Amin district, many of them Shiites who fled to Baghdad from Bakuba, where U.S. troops are waging an offensive against insurgents, accused U.S. helicopters of striking buildings during the fight with gunmen and killing civilians. The U.S. military did not immediately comment on the fighting. Among the dead were at least one woman and two children, and some of the men slain appeared to have been armed and firing on the Americans, Iraqi police and hospital officials said. Some of them did. Doesn't mention, of course, the ones who weren't. AP television news footage showed buildings riddled with holes from heavy machine gun and rocket fire, and a minibus with its front seat blasted away. U.S. forces have been waging an intensified security crackdown against Shiite and Sunni militants in and around Baghdad for nearly a month as the Iraqi government struggles to make political progress. That's a nice phrase. Not quite sure what it means. Disputes among Shiite, Sunni, and Kurdish leaders have severely weakened Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, even as the United States presses him to enact reforms. One of Iraq's most powerful Shiite politicians, Abdullah Zir al-Hakim, underlined his support of al-Maliki in comments to the Associated Press on Thursday. Al-Hakim said his party, the biggest in parliament, was working with al-Maliki on a government reshuffle that would strengthen the prime minister. This is kind of pro-Bush writing from the AP. There's no mention of the fact that the third largest party in the coalition has withdrawn from the government, that the parliament has been unable to meet for 2 weeks because of can't get a quorum, and that they are stymied because the U.S. is pressuring them to push through legislation which essentially gives away massive oil rights to foreign companies, and they don't want to do it. This is what the U.S. is calling reform, as well as various other measures. The al-Maliki government in Iraq, this is my opinion, is in a position where it's in power, and it continues to want U.S. military support in spite of a majority opinion by Iraqis in every poll since 2005 has wanted U.S. troops out. But the Maliki government needs the U.S. troops in because once the U.S. troops leave, the Maliki government is toast because they're regarded as collaborators. They're going to go down. Now, maybe they'll go down soft into re-education camps, or maybe they'll become simply removed from power, or maybe they'll be shot by victorious insurgents in a civil war, or maybe they'll simply maintain their own position. But they'd certainly rather have 170,000 U.S. troops defending them in the green zone. But whether that's defending the Iraqi people generally, of course, is the issue, and whether it's creating, making up for the damage that the United States has done instead of creating more damage, of course, is clearly the answer to that is no. It's creating more damage. It's sparking more resistance. And it's all being fabricated under a kind of a series of myths that you can hear if you listen to the debate in the Senate. If you go into C-SPAN, you can hear the Senate and the House debating very weak resolutions that talk about setting in 120 days, setting a schedule for withdrawal so that most troops have to be gone. You have to start removing troops after 120 days and have troops out by April, but there can still be plenty of troops there provided they're engaged in anti-insurgent activity or security duty. In other words, they want to defend those bases. They want to defend that oil. They want to keep the military presence in the country, both Democrats and Republicans. So they're still playing the game of wanting to continue the war while pretending to end it. And so even the people who are supposedly in favor of the resolution is actually the Democrats' way of. And the Republicans are actually right about this. They're saying you Democrats are just putting this resolution that the president is going to veto. Even though it gives him continued power to do what he wants to do, and just states that in 120 days he has to set up a plan to remove people. He's so arrogant and so determined to do his own follow his own military program that he won't even do that, even though essentially he could continue to maintain an occupation in Iraq indefinitely, at least until the Democrats come into power, and then he could leave it with them, which seems to be part of his strategy. But he doesn't want to do that, and so the strategy is, well, we'll make him veto it, and we'll look good, the Democrats are saying, to our the liberal anti-war people who make up now 70%. These are people who really want U.S. troops out by next year, period. Out, out, out. Not, you know, with a residual force, not a redeployed force, not a over-the-horizon MIRTHA force, but out of Iraq. Seems to be the mood of the American people. Now, I got to look more closely at some of those polls. Maybe they just want sort of out of Iraq. But it looks like, as you know, the Congress is far, far behind the American public, not to mention Bush, who's, you know, has no interest at all in the American public. In fact, most of the people in the power elite up there don't give a damn what the American public think. They don't get their money mostly from the American public, but of course they have to solicit their votes from the American public. And the question is, how can they phrase it? And every single person who stood up was babbling about how wonderful our troops are and how we've already had 3,600 deaths, and either we want to support them and get victory in Iraq and give the surge a chance, or we want to withdraw them and so we can support our troops and bring them home safely. But all the focus, of course, is on the great, valiant, honorable troops, and not the kind of things they're actually doing over there. Shooting down civilians, raping women, occupying a foreign country, assisting in the looting and demolition of a country, you know, encouraging a civil war. None of this is being honestly discussed because these people are afraid to say a word about American troops as what they are, they and the Blackwater mercenaries over there. They are killers, lethal killers, who are killing people daily over there. And they're doing it in your name with your money. And to claim that they're somehow we've got to get them out because there are boys and girls, to me, I mean, you're saying that American lives are more important than Iraqi lives, the welfare of these Americans is somehow more legitimate than the welfare of the people whose country they have invaded. It's not a position that has any kind of moral backbone or coherence. It's just not a valid position. I mean, it's certainly true that people in the military are under pressure to be there, that they face all kinds of penalties and court-martials and dishonorable discharges and all kinds of shit if they disobey orders. And it's certainly no easy matter to do that. But that doesn't mean one shouldn't recognize exactly what they are. Killers. Hired killers invading a foreign country, occupying a foreign country, bombing a foreign country, murdering in a foreign country. That's what's going on, and that's what the Congress isn't talking about at all. I don't hear Kucinich talking about that. You know, I don't hear any Barbara Boxer or any of these senators talking about it, of course. You know, Clinton, Obama, even Gravel, the senator from, Mike Gravel, or some of the people who I have the most respect for in terms of saying the most sensible things about Iraq, are not really talking about the murder that's going on over there, mass murder. That's what war is, of course, mass murder. And it can only be defended if you are engaged in a war of liberation. You can only be defended if you're defending your own country, if you're trying to overthrow tyrants in your own country, in your own area. You know, if you're foreign mercenary troops, then as far as the domestic people go there, a bullet for you is the best thing that can happen to them, right? To get you out of there if there's no other way to do it. Anyway, this latest story, which I kind of got sidetracked from, talks about more civilians being killed by the U.S. And That's going to be, of course, increasingly the case as bombing replaces a ground troop movement, and that's probably what's going to be happening because, well, that was that lesson of the Vietnamization in Vietnam when Nixon made the big deal of pulling the troops out, his secret plan to win the war, but he actually, of course, escalated the war. Here's an interesting story from Oregon. Portland, Oregon, an Oregon man says he and his family were accosted and harassed by an Oregon state trooper while exercising their constitutional right to protect the war or protest the war on a public sidewalk in Portland on December 9th of last year. David Brownlow, 49, who serves as vice chairman of the Constitution Party of Oregon, filed a $1 million federal civil rights lawsuit against senior trooper Ken Moore for violating his right to freedom of expression under the U.S. Constitution, pursuant to 42 U.S.C. 1983. Title the civil rights section that lets you sue. According to Brownlow, who worked on the Mary Starrett for Governor campaign on the 2006 election cycle up in Oregon, he was standing on the sidewalk with his wife and 12-year-old daughter adjacent to a Portland mall, peacefully holding up a sign that read, "Support our troops, bring them home." Brownlow's son, Jared, is currently serving with the U.S. Army in Baghdad, making this a personal as well as political action. While they displayed their sign to passing motorists, Trooper Ken Moore saw the family, sped up to the scene, and stopped in the street in front of the small sidewalk demonstration, according to Brownlow. The visibly agitated trooper then got out of his patrol vehicle and began shouting at us, claiming that we were breaking the law and demanded that we put away the sign and leave the area immediately, Brownlow said. During the confrontation, Brownlow said he was shocked when the angry trooper threatened to arrest him. My wife, Suzanne, and I were peacefully exercising our constitutional right of free speech and assembly during an Iraqi war demonstration. Here I was being threatened with imprisonment by a police officer, obviously angry about my position on the Iraq war, explained Brownlow. Continuing. Surprisingly, said Brownlow, when he asked what law was being broken by him and his family, Trooper Moore replied, "When a trooper tells you you are breaking the law, that is all you need to know." Mr. Brownlow, a savvy political activist, demanded to know what law or ordinance was being broken, at which point Trooper Moore jumped over the traffic barrier onto the sidewalk and shouted directly into Mr. Brownlow's face that it was enough to be told the law was being broken, and if you do not move immediately, you will be arrested. Brownlow described how his child, by now quite terrified, moved from standing between her parents to hide behind her mother. According to Mr. Brownlow, his wife then said to Senior Trooper Moore, "We're not blocking the road, nor are we blocking the sidewalk." This caused the officer to point a finger at her in front of her child, shouting, "If you do not stop talking, I will arrest both of you for disorderly conduct." Brownlow also described how the angry trooper grabbed the banner out of his and his family's hands, folded it up, and then threw it into his patrol vehicle. Brownlow also described how the angry trooper grabbed the banner. I already said that. When the trooper returned, according to Brownlow, he was still shouting at the family, and at that point, Brownlow turned around with his hands behind his back and said to the trooper, "Go ahead and arrest me. I won't resist." Instead of cuffs, Trooper Moore demanded that I produce my driver's license. When I did, the trooper went back to his patrol truck and demanded that we meet him inside the Clackamas Mall parking lot, said Brownlow. While in the parking lot, Trooper Moore demanded to know if I was armed. I told him that while I possess a concealed handgun permit, I was not armed at the time and lifted my coat to show him, he said. Trooper Moore demanded to know if Mr. Brownlow had been armed earlier, but Mr. Brownlow refused to answer. Trooper Moore, still very agitated, threatened that if he arrested me, I would lose my concealed handgun license. I continued to challenge the trooper to arrest me, but no arrest was made. The Brownlows told Trooper Moore that they were demonstrating in part to speak out on behalf of their army son, who was fighting in Iraq. Mr. Brownlow informed the trooper that he was completely wrong about the First Amendment, something their son was supposedly fighting to protect. As vice chairman of the Constitution Party of Oregon, as well as a former federal congressional candidate, Brownlow said he has spent considerable time researching the U.S. Constitution. I am confident that no laws were broken. When Mrs. Brownlow asked the trooper where her family would be allowed to protest the war, the trooper answered, "In your own front yard." Then something surprising occurred. According to Mr. Brownlow, after this exchange, the demeanor of Trooper Moore changed considerably. Trooper Moore apologized for his behavior and for scaring my 12-year-old daughter. He returned the banner upon request. In fact, I was even more worried when the trooper's demeanor suddenly changed. I wondered if this trooper was bipolar or something, he said. Brownlow then requested permission to leave, which was granted. As they were leaving, Mr. Brownlow informed Trooper Moore that there were going to be consequences for the trooper's outrageous behavior and that the matter was far from over. Newswithviews.com contacted the Oregon State Police to interview Moore's supervisor, Sergeant Christopher Allori, but we were told that Sergeant Allori was unavailable until January 22nd. Now, actually, the story is dated January 16th of this year, so it's many months old. But I found it still interesting, so hence I'm reading it. With regard to the complaint against Trooper Moore, newswithviews.com was told the matter was being investigated by the department's internal affairs investigators, and there would be no comments until the conclusion of the IA investigation. Perhaps next time on Sunday, when I come back on Sunday morning, I can try to give you an update on this article and see if there's actually been any result, whether Trooper Moore is still trooping around, seizing people's signs, shouting at them, threatening them with arrest, bullying them, and then later apologizing. I'm glad he apologized. I'm still looking for an apology from the officials in the county building who've falsely called deputies on us three times as we attempt to get records around the sleeping ban, and I haven't gotten any apology yet. In fact, I'm going to read you now, if I get the proper letter here. Let's see. Yeah, I guess this is it. I'm going to find you a letter that Attorney Kate Wells will be sending to the clerks of the county court around this issue. And again, for those of you who don't know what this is about, we're working on getting a lawsuit against the city to make it sure that police will stop arresting people for sleeping at night in Santa Cruz who are homeless, who have no legal place to go, and who face a $90 fine. And as I've said many times, there's space for 40 of them tonight, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 of them. And there's just no place, and yet people are still getting tickets regularly, getting threatened and bullied, and cops are acting as though they're behaving constitutionally when, in fact, they're engaging in cruel and unusual punishment, according to the standard established by the United States Federal Court of Appeals in Los Angeles in the Jones case. So Kate Wells has written this letter tentatively. We're still kind of finalizing it, but I'm going to read it anyway because I think it gives a pretty good indication of what we're doing, and it might be of solace to some folks who are, well, getting hassled under this law. And again, I encourage people who have gotten tickets under the sleeping ban to come on down to the protest on Sunday. We'll be doing a third week of signature gathering, protesting, bagel munching, singing, and maybe a little soapboxing in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz, or BS Santa Cruz, as we sometimes call it. That's the Coonerty's bookstore on Pacific Avenue, which has kind of a schizophrenic attitude towards the homeless. In a personal way, they've let homeless people sleep in their area, in their kind of under their overhang. They have a public bathroom, which is generally open to the community, not just to customers, and they have had that for 20 years, though I've been banned from their store for 13 years now, more or less, because I protested in front of the store and was blamed for property damage. Which protesters, it wasn't the protesters that were with me, it was somebody else did later, several days after our protest. But Neil Coonerty felt that was adequate basis for banning me. And that's fine. We were boycotting his store anyway because he supported the downtown ordinances. And indeed, Ryan Coonerty, who is now vice mayor of Santa Cruz and works in this store, and though he has no economic interest, he was telling me by phone, and I appreciate that phone call. He's still affiliated with the store, and of course, his father, Neil Coonerty, now the supervisor, owns the store. And it's appropriate that people who are public officials be held to a strong standard of basic civil rights respect. And Coonerty, particularly Ryan Coonerty, is the vice mayor, and who will be, if tradition is any guide, the mayor next year, or actually later this year, in November and December. The vice mayor usually becomes the mayor. We don't get to elect him. He just sort of succeeds to that position. The council elects him. He has said that he doesn't feel has any problem with arresting poor people at night, essentially violating the Constitution, as he sees. He doesn't think it's violating the Constitution, of course. He thinks it's perfectly okay. But he hasn't bothered to read the decision that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Ninth Federal Court of Appeals, has put into power last April, before this April, actually a year and a quarter ago. And he won't reveal or get the city council to reveal the secret opinion given by John Barisoni to the council as to why Santa Cruz is so superior to Los Angeles, that whereas in Los Angeles it's legal to sleep at night on the streets by court order, their law is unconstitutional, which says you can't sleep, sleep, sit, or lie at night on the sidewalk in Skid Row. Why the courts can say down there that's not the case, but somehow we can ignore that decision up here. Technically, we can, in the sense that there was only the injunction was only offered, the lawsuit was only about Los Angeles, but the standard was issued by a court that covers the entire 9-state area, including California and all the adjacent states, and therefore it's operational for us too. It is now precedent. It is a written decision. And while it is still, in a certain sense, being discussed and contested, it's the law. It's cruel and unusual punishment to arrest homeless people. And the city is legally vulnerable. But apparently City Attorney Barisoni and City Manager Dick Wilson don't care about this. So we're trying to educate the community and also have a little dialogue with Ryan Coonerty, who so far has declined to come out and have a real dialogue with us in any kind of forum where he could actually discuss this intelligibly. He's declined to come on the air and talk about it. He's a nice guy. He returns his phone calls, but he won't talk about it. And he's the only attorney who's actually on the city council. He teaches classes that he bills as constitutional law. He teaches two such classes at UCSC in the summer. He says he can audit them, by the way, so if anybody wants to go up there and try to audit them, he said that would be fine. Anyway, 2 o'clock on Sunday, we'll be there, tabling, singing, taking names of people who might want to be plaintiffs in this sleeping ban lawsuit. If you've been arrested for sleeping, if you've gotten a sleeping citation in the last year or two, if you are homeless or have been homeless or are likely to be homeless again, then you are a candidate we want to talk to. And you can either come to Bookshop Santa Cruz, 1520 Pacific, the front of the bookshop, or we'll be there tabling 2 o'clock on Sunday, or you can give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at the HUF number, 423-HUF, 423-4833. So what we were doing in addition to this is trying to find out how people get treated in the courts and the court system by the judges around this issue of the sleeping ban, this municipal code cooked up by the police department, passed by the city back in the late 70s, and maintained by all these progressive city councils year after year, in spite of protests by thousands of people over the years. It's called Municipal Code 6.36010A. It's a section of the camping ordinance. Since there's no legal campgrounds in Santa Cruz, we got actually a sleeping ban, a blanket ban, and a camping ban. The sleeping ban says you can't sleep after 11 at night. Blanket ban says you can't cover up with blankets after 11. And the camping ban says you can't cover up protective tents and tarps and so forth, even if it's raining, at any time of the day or night if you intend to remain overnight. And when we attempted to get the disposition of how have the courts treated people who've come in, have they granted them fee waivers? Have they dismissed the cases because it's obvious there's no shelter for them? Have they fined them? Have they taken them to jail? We couldn't get the records. They wouldn't let us have the records. And that whole story is on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And we've written them letter after letter. This is our latest letter from Kate Wells, who's a local attorney. It's to Alex Calvo, who's the chief executive officer of the Santa Cruz court system. Dear Mr. Calvo, thank you for your May 1st response to my February 9th letter, Better Late Than Never. Unfortunately, it appears that the issues remain unresolved, despite my client's attempts to gain access to the records in accordance with the terms stated in your letter. Attached is a list of cases on which my clients have been trying to obtain information for nearly a year. This is a formal request under the California Rules of Court 2.503 that you make these records accessible in electronic form, if possible, within 10 working days. My clients do not need you to make copies of any of these records, nor even to search the records. They simply request access to the public records themselves. The one time Mr. Norris's request to view a record was granted, it took the clerk less than a minute to pull up the record on her computer. Hence, it is not within the spirit or the letter of the law for you to charge them for simply viewing the records. In order to facilitate viewing some 250 to 300 records, my clients will be willing to view them, as you have suggested in the past, in the municipal court viewing room upstairs or in some other convenient place during business hours. Recent attempts to gain access to these records continue to be obstructed by clerks in Department 10, ostensibly on your instructions. Mr. Norris says he presented a written request on June 21st to view 10 cases, specifically instructing the clerk to stop her search short of the 10 minutes allowed at no charge. Mr. Norris would have preferred to see the cases there and then at the public window, being aware that this could have been accomplished conveniently, since all the information was and is available right there on the clerk's computer. However, he agreed, per Supervisor Melody Parmeter's suggested procedure, to view the records the next day in the viewing room upstairs. Instead, his written request was rejected, and he was presented with a new form seeking driver's license numbers, social security numbers, birth dates, and other extraneous information regarding the citee, including a potential $15 fee for any time your clerk spent over 10 minutes in simply making the indicated records available. This happened despite the fact that his request contained the names of the defendants, the citation numbers, the dates of the incidents, and the ordinance which he or she was charged with violating, more than enough data to have found the requested records quickly. The clerk, under orders apparently from Supervisor Tess Fitzgerald, also refused to date stamp Mr. Norris's document and deliver it to Ms. Fitzgerald, insisting again that he return the next day for a possible meeting with Ms. Parmeter. A request on the same day by Ms. Linda LeMaster for one case elicited a similar refusal under what is apparently a newly enacted policy. This policy, apparently devised specifically to address my client's public records requests, denies timely access to any public records except one's own. A request the following week by Mr. Thomas Levitt to view the records of one case not only received the same response, but also the warning that it might cost $15 for him to access the records, that he'd have to wait a day, and that he would have to fill out the extensive aforementioned form. When he began to walk away with the blank form to give a copy to the media, he was ordered by the clerk to return it. More detailed accounts of these encounters can be found online at the following addresses, and there are several addresses. And if you're interested, you who are listening out there in pursuing this issue and reading more about it, again, you can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and look up two stories, Not So Public Records and Public Records, Even Just One, Only If You Agree to Pay. It is ironic that with all the time your clerks have spent dismissing, avoiding, and or rejecting my client's public records requests, the requests could have been complied with long ago. I have researched traffic courts in Monterey County, San Joaquin County, Santa Clara County, and San Mateo County, and they all recognize the right to give free public access to infraction records either by microfiche or computers available to the public. While we understand your computer system may disadvantage you in providing such access, presumably it was you who chose this particular computer system, and it is therefore both unfair and unlawful for you to refuse my client's requests to view these records in a timely manner, as you have repeatedly done. I understand Mr. Norris attempted to set up a meeting with you last week, but was instead referred to the phone number of the automated traffic court system, in effect refusing such a meeting. Please let me know when and how in the next 2 weeks we can examine the attached records. If you are refusing speedy access to the records requested, please cite the statutory authority on which you are relying to do so, because since apparently other counties make such access available, you will spare everyone a lot of time, expense, and anxiety if you would please act quickly on this request. Sincerely, Attorney Kate Wells. My thanks to Kate Wells for writing this letter, which I contributed to. If you've had bad experiences with the courts, I'd like to hear about it. If you've had some problems with the police department around the sleeping ban, I'd like to hear about it. And the number to call is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you've got something you want to say on the air about any of this stuff, or you want to raise these issues on the air, you can call and talk about these issues on the air. Still time, and the number to call is 427-3772. And sorry for the dead air there. I'm back. Don't go away. But actually, I'm about to go away soon. I'm going to play an interview or two more before I leave from the street. I'll be back on Sunday in the morning. Again, we'll be pursuing the E3 Playhouse saga. There's going to be a July 24th City Council meeting, a final hearing on whether this particular musical venue, which apparently provides a lot of community support, will be allowed to continue in operation. And right now, it looks like the bureaucrats have won 4-2. If you want to see some change in this, you better call the City Council. And the number to call there is 420-5020. 420-5020. Again, another number to call if you want Representative Assemblyman Laird to explain and to change his vote or to change his position. If you want to express your opinion about, you know, not wanting to go to war with Iran or Bush, support a Bush policy of a frenzied demonization of Iran and the situation where we're getting closer and closer to another war there, you can give a call to Laird at 425-1503, 425-1503. And if you haven't got any of those numbers, you can look them up in the phone book, or you can give me a call and the very simple The Huff Line, 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F. So I'm going to roll into some of these interviews. I'm going to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadside. I'm going to apologize for all the different dead air moments and screw-ups, and hope that you aren't too discouraged and that you do your own research. Let me know what's going on. Keep the lines of communication open to the community. It's not going to happen through the Sentinel. It rarely happens through the Good Times or the Metro and other radio stations, but it can't happen here because we will put you on if you've got breaking news in the community. At least I haven't heard of people being turned away yet, and I certainly won't turn them away from my show. Again, the number to call here is 427-3772, or the off-air number in case you want to leave a public service announcement, give a donation, inquire about possibly becoming a member of the collective, or possibly get more information, is 427-4523, 427-4523.
And it's about 15 to 6 talking with
Sandy Telness.
And Sandy, you're from out of town?
Actually, I grew up in Santa Cruz.
Oh, so you're a local?
Yeah, but I was a street minister in another town, but my ministry didn't pay me a lot of money, and I got stranded in Santa Cruz.
And what happened?
Well, I just had tire problems and couldn't travel any further. And anyway, one of the nights that I was sleeping in my vehicle, I was politely told by an officer that I was breaking the law, I had a broken leg at the time, and I was allowed to know that it was mercy that I was getting the ticket, because it was like 10:36, and I would have been able to get out of the ticket if I hadn't been able to get out.
11 o'clock is when the sleeping ban began.
Okay, I was told it was 10:30, but he gave me he didn't give me the ticket because he thought I would be able to get out of it. But yeah, that was interesting. And then another time I was sleeping outside of town, and I kind of ran into another lady who was stranded, and I showed her where I was sleeping peaceably. But apparently two of us attracted attention, and the police came, and they ended up letting us stay again, because again I had a broken leg. And so I
now you don't, Dave.
Right, I have my, but and I'm also employed again.
And indoors.
Yes, and I have a home. But anyway, so that was, I thought that was rather interesting to find out that I was breaking the law by sleeping peaceably in my vehicle. And it was like, okay, so what am I supposed to do? Go sleep on the sidewalk? But anyway, because I wasn't in the situation.
Ironically, that was one proposal the City Council had. You can't sleep in your vehicle, but you can get out of your vehicle and sleep on the sidewalk. The craziest thing you ever heard of.
Yeah, I just thought it was very interesting that I would be breaking the law by sleeping. But anyway, thank you for your time.
Sure, and here's a card.
Okay.
If you get hassled again, call up and report on it for
free.
I'm
not worried about my own hassle. I was interested in somebody else's hassle.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, it's more important. You have to be outside.
Pregnant. There's no place to go. And in this town, there are shelters, but if you dare to be honest and admit that you might have had a sip of beer within 3 months, you have no. They will not shelter you. And that is pretty. No, it's worse than that. It's outrageous. It's hypocritical. It is prejudice.
And actually, it's not a sip of beer within 3 months. Certainly, it is if you are intoxicated or if you are, you know, if you have beer on your breath, often that can be the case. Usually, however, it's simply that there just is no shelter. I interrupt this to add a little truth in advertising here or my own commentary. These interviews were done yesterday in front of the Elm Street Mission, where they have a nightly meal on Wednesday night where people line up along the sidewalk and wait for a meal with their religion, or deal with religion with their meal.
It's discriminating. It's all kinds of things, and very, very uncommonly.
You're eager to work to end this law, right?
Pardon?
You're eager to work to end this law.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to give me a call, and you're going to just volunteer to do some work.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll talk about it, because I'm tied up pretty much 24 hours a day. And
we've been talking with
Sandy Telnus.
Thanks, Sandy.
You're welcome.
Any final words?
Just keep working on it. Don't let it go down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody have anything you want to say for Free Radio Santa Cruz about this? Okay. Anybody else get sleeping band tickets or hassled? Okay.
I know somebody got hassled. A friend of mine, he was tasered 17 times.
How long ago?
About 2 months ago.
And where was this?
Right here in Santa Cruz.
And what was his name?
Boo. He's a musician.
And how did that happen?
He was on medication, and they thought he was a mental patient because he was having, like, heat prostration. And they just came up on him and just tasered.
And you witnesses, or did you hear about it?
No, I talked to him, and he told all the people in our church about it.
So this is a second-hand account from him.
Yeah. If you want me to get you to him, I can do that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Because he said a basketball player on the East Coast, they tasered him 3 times, and it killed a guy. This is assault.
It's actually, tasering has killed a number of people. You know,
yeah,
that's true.
And they tasered him 17 times.
But it's all for his own good, you understand. The police have to do that. They have no choice.
I see.
Yeah. Here, give him my card.
He's looking to get a lawyer. The reason I ask, he's looking to get a lawyer to make a lawsuit against him. Like you're getting a class action lawsuit against the camping?
Yeah, against the sleeping
band. You know who I recommended is that lady that did the Baker helmet law?
Kay Wells.
Kay Wells.
She needs help. She's trying to do the lawsuit against the sleeping band, but she needs help.
She's working on that, too?
Yeah.
She's a good lady.
Thank you, man.
Talking with. I'm seeing everybody's getting hassled about sitting on the wall or sitting anywhere or doing anything. As long as we get off out in the where the public ain't at, they leave us alone. But if we get out where the public's at, they harass us. And that's what I see.
What's your name?
My name is Joel Thomas.
And how long you been around, sir?
A long time, so about 6-7 years. So.
Any hassles for sleeping?
No, I hadn't had. You know, where I'm at, I'm cool. So.
You're out. You're sleeping every night.
Yeah.
You have any friends who've been hassled for sleeping?
I'm hearing people getting tickets in the last 2 weeks. A lot of them. So. And I see people moving their stuff, you know. So.
Any destruction of tents in the Poganip or hassles for the parks?
I heard somebody went to the chief of police and told him that a guy was cutting up tents, and he had a little talk about it. We got a cop over here now.
Officer Hoppy with his bike is across the street.
I don't see why they should be around here watching us just because we want to come to a feed, you know. So.
I let it on.
He's taking off.
Yeah, he's going to give those guys tickets for going the wrong way on this street.
Yeah.
And here he goes right up the street there the wrong daggum way, you know. He did the same damn thing. I wish I had a movie camera.
Criminals there just trying to get away on a skateboard. Oh, that's really urgent.
The police have special prerogatives, you know. They have the
They
got blue uniforms and guns.
The police work for you. And somebody that works for you shouldn't be out here trying to make you a criminal or anything else. I was in the military for 14 years fighting for these people's freedom. And if this is what freedom is all about, they can stick it right up their ass.
Because Thank you.
I really think that it's time to redo this thing.
Please, you're ruining.
Don't bike it.
Go ahead.
Hey, thank you, man.
Well,
we've been talking with
Joel Thomas.
Thanks, Joel. Anybody else got things to say for Free Radio about the subject?
Not right now, I don't.
If you do, let me know.
Well, I will. You know that. I found out
that you have to fight for freedom every day. And when I went to the military and following years, I thought, well, you deserve freedom, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get freedom. You have to fight for it every day. Here's a cop back again.
Right. But, well, don't let that stop you from talking, man.
Yeah. I just don't like them around me.
Well, one thing I did notice is when I was up on...
And unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. Coming up next, from the Cream of the Dregs with Uncle Dennis. Stay tuned for 3 hours of lilting music, a steady beat, and maybe a little info on environmental issues. So don't go away. And come on back on Sunday, and I will be blasting at you again, 9:30 in the morning, maybe even earlier if you check in with Thomas Levitt on the wake-up call. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Lights.
And welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. I'm Uncle Dennis, and of course, it's time for From the Cream to the Dregs. I've been away for a couple of weeks, and had a really good time hanging around in the Sierra Nevada of California, and now it's time to get back to those things that make free radio what it is. Of course, this show is all about rock and roll from the 60s and the 70s. And tonight we're going to do something a little special. For those of you who have ever taken a look at the Mercury News, yesterday, on the Wednesday, July 11th edition of the Mercury News, in the Arts and Entertainment section, they published a playlist from the Summer of Love. Well, gosh, a playlist from the Summer of Love sounds like a natural for From the Cream to the Dregs. And there are a number of songs here, and just as a celebration of the Summer of Love, we're certainly going to try and play as many of these as I can find. I don't have all of them. Let's just start off with that as the initial caveat. Some of these albums are rare and hard to find. I don't have all of this stuff in the collection, but we will play absolutely everything from the playlist from the Summer of Love that we can. And let's get started with number two on their list. Number one is the 59th Street Bridge Song. I know I have that, but it's in storage, and I thought there was a copy of it here at the station, but we'll see. Anyway, we're going to start off with number two, which is a tune called You're Gonna Miss Me by the 13th Floor Elevators. Summer of Love playlist on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
You got to look around and you'll find her. You got
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you. With plasticine pauses, with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile. The girl with kaleidoscope
running right over. I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. Oh, baby, baby, you must be out of your mind. Do you know what you're kicking away? We got a groovy thing going, baby. Got a groovy thing. I never done you no wrong. Never hit you when you're down. Always gave you good loving. I never ran around. I never ran around. Oh, baby, baby, you must be out of your mind. Do you know what you're kicking away? We got a groovy thing going, baby. Got a groovy thing. There's something you ought to know. If you're fixing to go, I can't make it without you. No, 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 no. Oh, baby, baby, you must be out of your mind. Do you know what you're kicking away? We got a groovy thing going, baby. Got a groovy thing. We got a groovy thing.
groovy thing going, baby. Got a groovy thing. We got a groovy thing going, baby.